You're listening to Asheville FM at WSFM LP 103.3 Asheville. This is News Team Correspondent, and I am joined in the studio with David Forbes, the editor of the Asheville Blade. David, thank you so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
And what we're going to be doing today is our usual City Council report.
Though it is unusual in several respects this time. Yeah.
Precisely. And so what this entails is we just kind of recap the most recent City Council meeting that took place on Tuesday, February 13th. And let's just dive into it here, David. So one of the big sticking items that came up was the Blue Ribbon Committee on the Human Relations Commission report. Let's talk about that and maybe start in the beginning in terms of like how it came to be.
Sure. So it's no surprise to a lot of people that, you know, Asheville is a brutally segregated city. The city has major civil rights issues, from racial disparities in policing to housing to the health, you name it, basically. Mm-hmm. Human relations commissions are often used in many cities to try to address these. And sometimes they can even have like real oversight powers on parts of city government, on local businesses, on any number of things to try to, you know, kind of enforce, you know, non-discrimination type stuff, or kind of rein in departments or resolve disputes. Craft policy, that's a big thing they do a lot of the time. They can just deliver it directly to the city council. Durham has one of these, Greensboro has one of these, they're numbered throughout the state. And so after a lot of pressure around last year's elections, where some of these issues about inequity, especially about a lack of racial equity in Asheville, really came up, you saw this push kind of go forward for a human relations committee. But forming one in Asheville obviously is a, you know, somewhat fraught process. The city doesn't have a great track record. Actually, the number of people would say it has an abhorrent track record on actually creating institutions or fostering institutions that promote equity, especially racial equity.
Historically, David, has there ever been an entity that has served such a purpose?
So there were some entities, not this exact purpose. This is a different type of committee. There was a community relations council which ran into some various woes, mm-hmm. That dealt with some housing discrimination stuff. And there is an advisory board for police issues, which have really become kind of a flashpoint of these debates over you know, kind of bigotry in policing, mm-hmm. and these racial disparities in how policing's done in Asheville, which are pretty stark. But that committee was just advisory, and there was a very big split on it between some older members who generally, you know, wanted to kind of shut down public discussion and didn't want to put anything through the councils, and the newer ones who really thought this was a way, a place to craft policy. So kind of resulting from that, it was, well, what if we fold some of these committees into, you know, some of these roles and maybe some more into one committee that actually has some real power and scope. So into the Blue Ribbon Commission, which was appointed by a variety of community members. And you had some notable people on there, like Dr. Dwight Mullen, mm-hmm. who was the founder of State of Black Asheville. Mm-hmm. There's Dr. Darren Waters, mm-hmm. who's well-known in history for fostering African-American history in this area, starting a conference based on that each year. And Patrick Connett, longtime open government activist, was, I believe, one of the a vice chair, and then Dewana Little, who's mm-hmm. a pretty well-known local, like, nonprofit.
With
a
BIPA.
What did you say?
With a BIPA.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And activists on a number of fronts, and has been critical in the past some of the way that city government doesn't really support equity programs. Big debate last year. She and Connett presented on this issue, and they kind of – they emphasize a few things. This committee had its work cut out for it because it's dealing with such a wide topic.
Yeah.
And definitely I think there's going to be a lot of debate going forward about how this committee is exactly structured. They probably won't come about until this summer, maybe after the fiscal year. But they're recommending partly that the city take its equity manager, which the city hired in an effort to deal with some of these concerns. But there's been real concerns because this manager is under the communications department, which mm-hmm. doesn't really have a record for public transparency.
Right.
And also it adds, in Little's words, kind of an extra layer to things.
Extra layer of bureaucracy.
Yeah, exactly. And today there's plenty of those already. So basically this would have the equity manager, give the equity manager a staff, so it'd be an equity office, and make them either directly accountable to city council, a high-level position along with, you know, city manager, attorney, and clerk, or at the very least, like, their own department within the city that, you know, was directly under the city manager, like, say, public works or, you know, or mm-hmm. the police department or something like that. But at the very least, they try to want to make this more independent. There's been some pressure from activists, and I've endorsed this in a column I wrote last year, to go ahead and, you know, make this a fully independent position, just accountable to the council, so that you don't have this possibility that if the city manager is a problem, that, you know, or is fostering some inequities, then you don't have any constraint about that office investigating that person or anyone kind of under their charge. So that was the proposal. They proposed a 15-member commission with, you know, groups having at least two representatives, so no one is, you know, the one, say, the one LGBT person or the one African-American mm-hmm. individual on it. They have some further criteria, you know, at least six of the members need to be African-American. But there's going to be some debate over some of the other criteria. Like, there's one category for professionals of influence. Mm. I think there's going to be a lot of fight over what that exactly means. There's some concerns that could be, you know, kind of classist, depending on, you know, do you define money as making someone a professional with influence? Is it, you know, them being active in a lot of organizations? So expect to see some, like, definite fighting over exactly what that means. So it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out. The committee was definitely given like a role, at least in the proposal, in shaping policy mm-hmm. and kind of moving it forward to council and kind of overseeing some of these city departments. So definitely, I think this is one to watch. And it was interesting that it moved forward and that this committee emphasized, you know, what they saw as they need a pretty robust structure here. They said some of the public comments said repeatedly that there was concern this would be checking the box.
Yeah.
And that this members of this commission very definitely didn't want that to be the case. This committee needs to have some real clout and some real power.
A couple questions for you, David, regarding this committee. One, who will be serving as the liaison from City Council? And then two, the new Equity and Inclusion Manager, Kimberly Archie.
Yes.
How much of a role has she played in kind of getting this off the ground, if at all?
So she did not speak last night. So I admit this seems to have been driven mostly by the commission at this point, though definitely, I mean, I can't see any official who wants to, you know, do their job turning down more power and more staff, certainly. But she's not really been active, at least in the public debates at the city council dais. As for who the liaison is, that's one of the big questions that's going to have to be answered. The Human Relations Committee hasn't been created yet. It's going to, you know, this is a proposal. Councils accept it. They seem to be mostly positively inclined towards it. But Councilor Julie Mayfield, who's been criticized by Little and some other people for what they view as kind of a, you know, of an attitude of not giving enough resources towards equity efforts, said that she had a bunch of questions about the exact committee's composition, but she would save them until this came up again. Council will actually still have to pass a proposal and form the committee formally. Right. And that won't happen probably for a number of months yet.
Gotcha. We'll be on the lookout for that. So moving on here, the next kind of big topic that came up, I'll read the language here. So there was a resolution to not support the NC Department of Transportation proposal to widen Merriman Avenue to five lanes and requesting the NC Department of Transportation to collaborate with city staff to develop alternatives for Merriman Avenue and to meet regularly with city staff to review all other NC Department of Transportation projects with Asheville. What is going on with Merriman Avenue?
So there is basically the State Department of Transportation loves pavement and doesn't really care much about the rest of the cities that happen to be around it.
Love pavement.
Well, this is a good example of that. So, and this is, if any of y'all's listeners are interested, the article we have up right now at the last council meeting on the main page, AshevilleBlade.com, down the list, deals with this issue and some of the context around it. It's pretty interesting. So the city had actually been trying to foster a closer relations with the state DOT, and they claim at least that on some projects, like the very controversial I-26 project, which, you know, potentially has a lot of impact on West Asheville, it's a very detrimental impact, especially some more marginalized communities
for sure
here. Like the city is saying, look, we're working with DOT, we've built this relationship, we've scaled down some of the plans, it's going to be, you know, a lot better project than it was initially, and they put a lot of stock in that relationship. Asheville's political culture, and this plays across a lot of issues, is generally at the council level has been very averse to ever playing hardball. They're very big on let's create a consensus, let's kind of talk to each other, let's get a rapport with these agencies. They're not big on, you know, hey, we'll threaten a lawsuit unless, you know, we get our way, mm-hmm. like some cities are. And, you know, there's arguments for that, but definitely this was a case of it seems to have backfired on them mm-hmm. a good deal in some ways, because this proposal came forward with no notice to the city. And you heard not this past meeting last night, but on Tuesday, but the previous meeting mm-hmm. in January, you heard the sense of betrayal from them. Why would Department of Transportation not consult us and not lay out these plans very clearly? Because the plans aren't well liked by the public or council. Mm-hmm. They call for widening Merriman. The traffic in Merriman has not gone up substantially since 2000. I mean, there's been some spots like around the grocery stores and stuff like that where things are a little busier than they used to be. But even according to the DOT's own numbers, it's about where it was in 2000. So the city is like, look, This is going to demolish a bunch of stuff. It's going to make things less pedestrian and cyclist friendly. You know, it doesn't accord with any of our plans. Just proposing this kind of out of the blue. They were angry about it, and they passed this last night. They made it formal. They passed a resolution saying we are totally against this plan. They passed it, you know, 6-0. Councilor Brian Haynes was out. The meeting was ill.
Gotcha.
So every councilor that was there signed off on it. You heard from Asheville on Bikes and from a lot of local transit advocates, like, supporting the city, saying, look, you need to, you know, put some pressure on DOT. And the city's transportation director, you know, says, hey, DOT is listening. They're taking this seriously. But that's what he said last time, too. So we'll see if it plays out.
We shall see. Yeah. Moving on from that unanimous resolution to not support the DOT, the big news of the day, that was the day before Valentine's Day, about midday, it was announced that city manager Gary Jackson was going to be retiring, and kind of sent some shockwaves throughout.
This is big news.
This is big news, David. Yeah. So what does this mean in the immediacy in terms of kind of the transition out? Because it's going to come into effect December 2018.
So the idea is that Jackson will stay on until his successor is chosen, probably by around the end of the year. That's what council has announced so far. We'll see if that changes. But that's where things are right now. The meeting was kind of led with this last night. He got, you know, a lot of praise from Mayor Manheimer, who's generally been a very close ally of Jackson, and he got a standing ovation from council. But despite that kind of display of, you know, comedy and, you know, oh, he's, you know, he's just nearing the end of a long career. I mean, he's been in office for 13 years. He's been in office since 2005. He was appointed during an era when council was still run by conservatives. Actually, in the last few months, they would still be run by conservatives because the 2005 elections changed a lot of things.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's hard to understate how big this is. Jackson is, without a doubt, currently the most powerful single individual in city government. He's had a massive influence and a pretty controversial one. There's a piece up now. It's a deep dive, you know, piece where we go into some real in-depth history and some long-form journalism called Where We Are Now. That kind of – it goes into a lot of things with how Asheville's, you know, quote-unquote progressive era kind of started to fall apart around the last election, the reasons behind that, why – there's a lot of the progressives didn't turn out to be so progressive, the policies the city did and didn't pursue. And Jackson's very much at the center of all that. He definitely pushed city policy more to a conservative direction. There were a lot of steps that other city governments in North Carolina did kind of from progressive politics that Asheville did not pursue. And Jackson played a big role in that. The accomplishments his supporters, and he does have them, would list are things like, look, the city has AAA bond rating. You know, he weathered the Great Recession without major cuts to staff or like big rollbacks in services. The city has embarked on more infrastructure building. There's a lot of questions about how equitable that is. A lot of it seems to be going towards gentrifying and tourist areas, not a lot towards neglected and kind of marginalized communities, neglected by the city government at least. And that's been a big debate and a big fight in the last few years. At the same time, you know, it is funding for affordable housing has remained pretty paltry. The average life of a lot of Ashevillians has worsened in that time. So divisions have gotten sharper. Segregation has gotten worse. There has become a more widespread perception that city government, the city bureaucracy was kind of untouchable, and this is the person at the head of it. And notably, the last election, I think that was indisputable. You had, of the six candidates that made it pass into the general election, past the primary, four were very sharply critical of Jackson specifically, and you know, some even called for him to be straight up fired. The others, you know, said, okay, we need to rein this, you know, we need to rein city staff in, we need to kind of put more power back in council hands, we need to have much kind of closer scrutiny. And one of those, Councilmember Shanika Smith, won. And also even another of the victors, who was, you know, kind of more circumspect, Vijay Kapoor, also had criticized Jackson's handling of the RAD, River Arts Street Infrastructure Overhaul, where there were some massive cost overruns, where some parts for the Livingston Street areas, primarily African-American, were completely abandoned.
Transparency issues.
Massive transparency issues. And that's kind of a good example, because while that – the River Arts District thing, far as we know, was not fatal to Jackson's prospects, it was the latest in a long series of controversies. There's been the issues with the police department over the years. There's been the fights over the management of the transit system, where the city had to go back to the drawing board because the process got so badly handled by city staff. – there's a lot of them. And at a certain point, each one of those did a hit to the seat's credibility. There was a point about 2 years ago when a member of the public, referring to a case where the city had just demolished a bunch of food trees against its own plans and programs, criticized Jackson and kind of the culture of city bureaucracy, saying, look, you know, it feels like we take ideas to council and looks like we could get a half decent hearing, but then it just disappears into the process that the bureaucracy seems to run. And so I think that's very evident with public dissatisfaction. I mean, I'll just say when we put out a request for questions to ask city council candidates, the one we got more than any other was some iteration of when you're going to fire the city manager.
From the community.
From the community. And Grant, we actually didn't ask it in that way. We asked, you know, people to assess – candidates to assess the top officials and which ones they would – were inclined to keep or scrutinize or fire. But the fact was – the fact that that was what the community was saying is telling. Yeah. However, you know, council's trying to paint it, whatever the exact circumstances that emerge in a law, this is happening behind closed doors. I think it is indisputable that he was on far shakier political ground than he was before. He had more skeptical members of council than before, and he definitely had far less public support than before. So he's announced his retirement in a letter to, you know, and to Mayor Esther Mannheimer, and now she's announced it. While very definitely there is kind of a positive front on it, there's some real tensions here. And I think that's definitely going to play out in who the next city manager is. And whoever that is, whether they hold, you know, kind of Jackson's more conservative views or they tend to be leaning a little more towards, you know, kind of the center left or kind of progressive, the fact is the power situation in City Hall is going to change. Whoever they bring in is not going to have Jackson's connections, Jackson's history, his ability, his, you know, the deference he was often given by city councils. That's not going to be there. And so very definitely, I think there's almost no way in which you don't see a less powerful city manager and probably more power either going to department heads, you know, who may have been there a while, who head up individual departments, or to council members themselves, depending, you know, majority of them. And that's going to be an interesting thing to watch.
Right.
And I think who gets selected the next manager is going to be one of the biggest fights we've seen in a while in this town.
Absolutely. And we're still waiting for the dust to settle on Gary Jackson retiring, but you know, we have seen a lot of these shifts in power to continue to give the city manager like much of that, and we've seen a lot of heavy-handed kind of just like, this is how it's going to be, even going, you know, with the agendas of city council meetings and the shift in that. As people are paying attention, David, I think I go back to transparency. Do you foresee a transparent process in terms of a delegation of some of these powers and roles and responsibilities of the city manager held in terms of how it's going to be laid out coming into the hiring of a new city manager?
That's a good question. I think the role that Jackson will play in selecting his successor or won't is a big question. And that is going to affect a lot of the internal dynamics on council. You know, how much of this was him reading the, maybe the writing on the wall or deciding, hey, it's a good time to get out. How much of it may have been specific pressures behind the scenes. You know, we mentioned these kind of heavy-handed controversies. You know, there was a big one last year, the fire of the city budget and expanding policing, where the police chief basically skipped the entire budget process she was supposed to go through. And council, you know, it was a split vote, but they passed her recommendation. That got a lot of the public very angry. You saw a lot more people kind of paying attention to these processes than before. You tally that up with the, you know, 15-plus other controversies that have been kind of hit the public eye in recent years. And eventually confidence kind of gets sapped. So that's where I think the selection process is where I think you might see divisions on council between people who are kind of sympathetic to Jackson saying, look, you know, we want to give him a role in this. We think he's experienced and has integrity and is valuable at this. And others saying, no, look, it's, you know, it's time for him to retire.
Yeah.
We need to kind of counsel, are the people chosen to make the decision? We need to be serious about it. And that's another thing, too, is that he has exercised a lot of power in the choices of city officials, especially the very controversial ones like the city attorney or the police chief who've kind of put the center of some of these controversies. So it's going to be interesting to see how a new city manager, if they do have a different viewpoint, interacts with these much more conservative officials that are still in office. And, you know, it's not uncommon for new city managers to also come in and clean house on some of those positions they have control over. Will that happen? We don't know. But it's going to be a big shakeup one way or the other.
That's for sure. And, you know, the city manager position, as well as the other topics that we talked about, a lot of them are kind of waiting and seeing in terms of, like, how they play out. Well, David, I know that you have a lot of pieces right now at your website in terms of a lot of these issues and the contextualized nature of them. Where can listeners go to read more about what's going on with our local government?
AshevilleBlade.com.
And, David, thank you, as always, for joining us.
Always a pleasure.